Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of what is my show called? Dropping the Gloves with Matthew Dandenault. I almost forgot, Matt. Is it Mathieu or Matthew?
Mathieu, officially.
Mathieu.
In French. En français.
Oui, oui. Je m'appelle Jean. My last game was with the Montreal Canadiens. So we kind of are kindred spirits that way. But thanks for joining the show, my friend. I know you're very busy.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Obviously, you're always welcome to come with the Montreal alumni. Now you get the one game in. That's awesome. Good.
It's very embarrassing. I've done a few of those games, and they do the rollout of the players. It's like, three-time Stanley Cup champion, almost 1,000 games, Mathieu Dandenault. Yeah. And then it's like they do Vinny Danfous and all these Patrice Brisebois and Chris Nyland. Yeah. Played one game for the Montreal Canadiens. So I'm just like, I don't belong here. I don't belong, but it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun trying to keep up with you guys.
It was a great game.
It was a hell of a game is right. It was a hell of a game. Okay. All right, let's get to you here because you've only played for two franchises in your career, and they're two very polarizing franchises, original six teams. Obviously, you started in Detroit, finished up in Montreal, and I'm just going to talk about that. Because you were fortunate to win three cups when you were younger, 20, 21, 25. You probably talked about it a million times. That's a fantastic thing. But I want to talk about Detroit now. You played with Steve Yzerman for almost 10 years. You obviously know him very well. I would assume he was your captain, your leader. You were around him for a long time. He's done in Detroit. And I know you don't want to, you know, did you hear that?
Yeah, well, he's moved upstairs, right? They moved him upstairs. They politely gave him a senior role, but
How was that? Is that a promotion firing kind of deal? How would you take that?
Yeah, that's like you kind of saving face type of thing. And but I think you know Steve Yzerman doesn't need anything, right? He's done it all, like you mentioned. The greatest leader I've ever been around. And just a great guy, and he was always really, really awesome to me. But it just got to a situation where, you know, it hasn't clicked. I mean, they were so close. I mean, last year I was bragging because every year, you know, we got to do predictions. And I'm the only one back in Montreal saying Detroit's going to make the playoff. And I looked awesome in February. I was like, hey, they're first in the Atlantic. And then
they're flying. You
know, yeah, I know. And then everything tumbled down and. And now the Larkin thing, it hurts. I mean, it obviously hurts when you sign a guy long term and then he wants to turn around and leave. And so that stung a lot. And I think for Stevie, it was just like a situation where they haven't made the playoff, the pressure's on. And now your number one center is like saying, well, it's either him or me. So type of thing. So I think the decision was made to kind of move along, but I'm not in all the details of what's happening in Detroit. I just wish everybody well because a lot of my good teammates are all part of the organization. That's what Detroit, the Illiches, they've been great, great, great owners, obviously. But they're like, you know, they're pretty proud because we do hire and have a lot of the guys working for them.
And a lot of people think that's the main part of the problem. But I want to go back to Stevie because, you know, obviously Montreal, Kent Hughes has done an amazing job with his roster management, signing players, drafting players. He's top notch. On the other hand, Detroit, do you think there's a lot of signings? Steve gets criticized for a lot of things. My thing is, do you think his pride and ego got in the way with Dylan Larkin? Because Dylan, you know, requests the trade. And I don't know Steve at all, all.
Yeah.
He seems like a very proud guy. Like it's either my way or the highway. Do you think that irked him? And he's like, that was like, what happened there? Because a lot of GMs maybe would have said, okay, let's work this out.
Well, it's a hard one to work out because obviously, I mean, Larkin's a fantastic player, but I think you're losing. You don't really have that number two slotted centerman. So, and then Larkin on most really good teams, is he really a number one or is he a solid number two, right?
Two.
So now you're like, you're kind of stuck. I don't even have a number two. And no, so I want to trade for something that's like number one caliber. And none of the four teams wanted to trade. That's the issue I have. Like, weirdly enough, I'm more of the side of the league on this one. Like, if a guy asks for a trade, you ask for a trade, like, but everybody's available. All the teams are available, not like four teams. I mean, you kind of like those four teams don't want to give you all that much because they have the leverage, right? Like you're stuck trying to deal with four teams only. So I think that's one of the rules I think they'll try to change for next time. But I think Stevie, yeah, he's a proud guy, and you know, it used to mean something to be their organization from the start and just build his way up because he did it. He went through like there was you know, some trade rumors even with Scotty Bowman at the time. There was a Alexei Yashin that was like the big thing because Stevie's like
No
I think
kidding.
his family was in Ottawa or something. I know he's from BC, but he lived in Ottawa, so that was like a local guy type of thing. So that was like there was like a 3 weeks where it was tough on him. I mean, he was our captain. He was 32 years old, and like Alexei Yashin was the next big star, right, for the NHL. And but he went through it, so he had all the growing pains of having a really shitty team where they had to give away cars on at the Joe Louis Arena way back when. So he built it up to eventually change his style of game to be a Stanley Cup contender. And he finally got those cups. So I think when a guy just kind of, you know, after a few years, just say, oh, I just want out, I want to quit, it's kind of tough. After being so close, I mean, like I said, they were like in first place back in January or in February. So I think it was just like, well, hold on. If you're going to ask for a trade, like, give me something. Not four teams because of what happened with the Quinn Hughes and then Tkachuk in Ottawa. All those American guys, they were like from that team, they're like, you know, they're like, hey, we have the leverage right now. And they probably do. But I think Steve was like, well, hold on, let me see what I can do. And then there's the pressure. I mean, there's a lot of pressure playing in that market. And now it's just like, I can't get a good trade done because you're always thinking, is it going to happen at the draft? No, it didn't happen at the draft. The next week after, the next week after. And then time lingers on, nothing happens. And it's like, you know, the Ilitches, they, you know, Chris Ilitch got, he's got stuff to do. And they haven't made the playoffs either. So it's just in 9 years, I think it was. So
Yeah,
it's
now it's
tough.
10. And well,
10 now. Okay.
they're coming off of that incredible run that you were maybe the start of, because you go to Detroit 95, 96, and then right after that, 96, 97, you guys win a cup, and then you win another cup. And so you're part of that dynasty, so to speak, and you ride that out for 10 years, and they continue on for another 10 years. And I don't know, do you blame Yzerman for the reaction that he's having? Do you think that he went into that situation maybe thinking he had all the answers from Tampa Bay because it was such a charmed run they had in Tampa Bay and everything was going to go right. And a lot of his
Well,
signings and a lot of his drafts didn't work in Detroit.
no, that's true. I mean, Detroit was always at the time when I got there, and I remember Ken Holland, you know, he would say like, I want to pay my scouts a little bit more because that's what helps us win and have good teams for a long run. And you know, when you get a I think it's bad when you get a Datsyuk in the sixth round and then a Zetterberg in the seventh. I mean, all the leagues they look bad, right? And but at the same time, we did get him, so we got him. And then it's just like it used to be something to, you know, to draft well and be proud and be with that organization. And even towards the tail end, like we won all these cups. I remember Ken Holland at the time was like, I need to blow this up. Like I'm
No kidding.
spending draft, I'm spending draft picks on marginal guys because now at the time they were trying to get that streak. 20, I think it got to 26 years in a row of making the playoffs, but that came at a cost. And here's the cost. It's been 10 years. They haven't made the playoffs. And it's just because at that time, it's like I'm spending draft picks on guys at, you know, at the deadline. I don't think we have that good of a team to make that good of a run. But you know, the ownership is like, we want to keep the streak going because, you know, they pay a new building. Everything's got to get paid for too, like the LCA, like Little Caesars Arena. You're building that, you're not making playoffs. It's kind of tough. So I think everything that comes into play, and I think obviously, you know, you wish, you know, you wish for the best. I'm going the homeboy, Detroit's coming back. Their godson type of thing is coming in, and he's gonna save the day. The Iser plan, and they got close, but they just couldn't finish at the end. And it's really unfortunate, and because I mean, obviously the guy doesn't need the money, doesn't need anything else, and it's just the passion of the game. And he had success with those Team Canada. He had success with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and for some reason they got close, but they just couldn't finish. I think they were missing an Yzerman in the dressing room to give all the good speeches for them to move on.
Yeah, was he in just your playing days? How huge was he? Because you had Zetterberg, you had Datsyuk, you had all these great players, Lidstrom and you and Matthew Schneider and all these guys. How was Stevie in the room kind of managing those talents?
Okay, so I think, and you bring in like in 2002, like 2001, and yeah, 2001, 2002, we brought in like a Brett Hall, a Luke Robitaille. Yeah. Like Brett Hall was kind of feared in the league. Like, is he going to be a tough teammate? He was an awesome teammate. Brett Hall is the shit. He's awesome. But at the same time, you need a dressing room that's big enough to handle a guy like that. And Steve Yzerman is one of the most respected guys that was out there. And like going through leadership, here's one of the moments I thought he was like the best. In 2002, we go on and we win the President's Trophy in March. So now we have seven more games to go in April. We go winless in those seven games. So now I think it was like four losses and three overtime loss, whatever. So now we're starting round one against Vancouver. We lose the first two games at home, okay? So now we're going back to Vancouver 0-2 and, you know, a Canadian market. And then they're like in the newspaper, oh, it's over. Like, we got them and everything. And here's what Steve Yzerman said the day before game three. We had a meeting. He's like, guys, I think we have an awesome team. And I do believe that we can win and we can come back in this series. I think they had some lucky bounces. You know, a couple goals went off a skate, off an ass, off a helmet, whatever it was. But I think we have to play the same way. And we will get a bounce that will go in. But we have to keep playing the same way and we have to believe. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then we go into game three. What happens? Nick Lidstrom gets to the red line, slap shot from the red line. Does he dump it in? Everybody else dumps it in. No, he decides to go at the net. Dan Cloutier, it goes in low far corner. And we looked at each other on the bench. Everybody, there's our bounce. And then we just kind of smoked them and won the next four games. But that's what the Steve Yzerman is. And Steve Yzerman was playing on one knee from the very first round. He had, I remember at the time, we had to hold him back and the big syringes and everything. So he knew he had to get his knee completely replaced in the offseason. He played on one knee for the whole playoffs. And so he was the greatest leader I've ever been around. And because of that, we won another cup just for his speech. It's just like he was really a good motivator. He didn't speak much, but when he did it, everybody listened. But really quiet guy, but what an awesome human being. So I owe him a lot of rings.
Yeah, and that team was just littered with Hall of Famers. I'm looking at the roster now. It's Shanny, Fedorov, Hall, Lidstrom, Robitaille, Yzerman, Larionov, Chelios, Datsyuk. I think those 10 guys are all Hall of Famers.
Yes. I'm waiting for the call.
Well, you know, you still got a couple. When you got Hasek and Net, it's insane. How fun was it playing in front of Hasek? Because he's a wild man goalie. I watched him as a kid. I was a big, you know, I went to Sabres games as a kid. Was he different to kind of play for because you had no clue what he was going to do?
Well, you had no clue. And, you know, you'd think after 15 years in the NHL, the language would be pretty good. But the Dominator was like, Massey, like in front of the net. And but we got Dominic Hasek
to do it. That's funny.
Well, you think the accent or something, 15 years, on, like, you know, I still have an accent, but still, yeah, I can do okay. But for him, it was like, no, let's go. It was weird. So, but the Dominator is, we got him especially to go straight up against Patrick Waugh in Colorado. Ah. That was the thing. Because, winning the three cups, one with Vernon, Osgood, and then the last one with Hasek. But it was straight up psychological to go against the Avalanche. And that's when we got him. And that's how good he was because... So in that playoff, we do meet the Avalanche in the semifinals. And the series is tied 2-2. So we're playing at home and we lose game five. So now we have to go back to Colorado. And and what does Dominic Hasek do? Gets a shutout in game six, gets a shutout in game seven. So that was the Dominator. But it was just like once you had a two-goal lead or something – and you're facing either Patrick Roy or Dominic Hasek. Like, it's tough. It's tough mentally. You know, you have to have a superb bounce or something. Something special needs to happen in order to win that game and come back in the game.
You're just a kid, man. Like, that's got to be nuts. You've already had two cups on your belt.
Yeah.
You're 25. Did you realize, like, how special of a moment this was versus Colorado, Sakic, Forsberg, Blake, Bork, all these guys, and you're just this young kid who's a part of this?
Yeah, it was special for sure. Like, you know, the first two cups, you're 21, 22. You're
right.
Like, oh, yeah. This is great. Life is good. And they're like, how does that then that it'll get two cups and Raymond Bork still doesn't have one? Like, So type of thing. This is what the stuff was being written back home. But, you know, obviously a little later in my career to win another one, obviously it's more special. You play, you know, your role is bigger type of thing. And that was the key thing. We haven't talked about Scotty Bowman yet, but that was one of the key for Scotty, is just to bring all these talent and just, there's only 60 minutes and you got to share them, and to have a Luc Robitaille on the fourth line and a Brett Hull that might not play as much. And all these guys, I mean, everybody had to check their egos aside for the common team goal. And you have to credit, you know, Scotty Bowman. And what Scotty was good at the same time, he was good. Like, everybody had like a role type of thing. Like, if obviously Lidstrom plays the first power play and first PK, but then Chelios would play the second power play and the first PK. I would play the second PK. And Steve Duchesne, my partner, he would play the second power play. So we all had like different roles to keep everybody in. And one of the good speeches I had in my career is with Scotty and Dave Lewis, who was the defensive coach. But it's like, he says, like, Dandy, he says, if you're going to play 12 minutes, 15, 18, whatever it is, I can only play Nick 30. I can't play him 60. So the 10, 12 minutes that you're going to play are just as important than Nick Lidstrom's minutes. How does that make you feel? Like, you want to run through a wall for the guy. So that was one of the key, and for everybody to mesh well, because, you know, there was just limited amount of ice time, but everybody, you know, took their role well, and, you know, we just kind of meshed and we never panicked. That's the one thing, like, when you go see playoff, like, what's so different about the playoff? Well, it's usually, you know, the first few minutes and the last minutes of every period. And if it's a young team, sometimes they'll panic with the puck. We never did. And I remember 2002, we go to Colorado, it was Carolina in the finals, and it was 2-2. I mean, there was a game that went in triple overtime, but that game, I remember Brett Hull scored with a minute, you know, 25 to go, and we were down, but we never panicked, and they kind of did. And that's what happened. And Igor Larionov, loved the professor, because he held on to the puck and scored in triple overtime. Named his red wine triple overtime. And I was on the ice for that. I was actually a defenseman screening their goalie, Artur Sirbe. I don't know why I got there. You have to see the highlight, because I just kind of took off. It was 1:30 in the morning, and I just, you know what, I'm just going to go to the net. And he never passed it to me, but he held on and just... top cheese, but just a great bunch of guys. But time, John, like, it's we didn't have a salary cap, so it was, we had an expensive team, let's say.
Also, what do you think you that team cost?
I think at the time we were like at 80 million or something.
80 million back in 2002.
Yeah. And Holly was supposed to sign with Montreal that summer. And and I think it's Chelly that called and said, "You want to come to Detroit?" "Yeah, I want to come to Detroit." And then he signed. So, but we were loaded. Obviously, I mean, guys were kidding around, but, you know, it was already 1-0 for Detroit in the warmups during the regular season. Yeah, because the other guy, you know, you're kind of stretching. You know, you're at the red line. You're stretching. Like, holy shit, like, all these Hall of Famers type of thing on the other side, right?
It'd be crazy intimidating to look across the ice and see those guys. It's like, okay, first line, Shanahan, Fedorov, Hall, second line, Yzerman, Robitaille, Larionov. Like, it's Datsyuk too, and Draper, and Holmstrom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If there was any weakness, it was on the back end, like, anything.
But then you had Nick. I mean, Nick was, you know, playing half the time. Here's my thing with Nick Lidstrom. 1 year... I think it was around Christmas time. Yeah, just before Christmas, early December, Dave Lewis came up to me and says, "Dandy, you're going to play with Nick. I go, well, sweet Jesus himself, Nick Lidstrom. He goes, yeah, you're going to play with him. So at the time, I was plus five. I finished the year plus 25. Like, all I did is just pass it over. Here you go, Nick. Here you go, Nick. I just passed it over the whole time. Either he made a great play or an awesome play, whatever it was. But that's the one guy that was always in the right place, the right situation, would read the play so well because he wasn't the biggest, wasn't the fastest, but yeah. He was just so smart. And you can never do a saucer pass on a 2-on-1. He'd just knock it down every single time. Yeah. And he just kind of smirked. He did it in practice. So, but that's how good Nick was. So Nick paired up with pretty much anybody. I mean, Larry Murphy came in for the first cup and he was awesome. Like Larry was kind of, he had a tough time in Toronto. He actually was booed sometimes. He came in and he was just awesome for those back-to-back cups because Larry's a smart guy too. So those two were going, you know, against the Legion of Doom that first year, going against right. Lindros, and they played super well. So, and then, we Chelly came in. Chelly was supposed to, you know, the tail end of his career. Chelly played another 12 years when he came in from Chicago.
That is the tail end of his career.
Yeah, like it was so weird. Like he had it. I think he didn't even have an ACL coming in from Montreal or something. It's some weird stuff. Like, I don't even have an ACL. And then he just played for another 20 years. Okay, Chelly. Chelly's a freak of nature, but we had Chelly. Chelly was great going against.
The stupid thing with Lidstrom, he was a third-round draft pick. So yeah, another incredible find by Detroit. I don't know how they found these guys, mostly from Europe, but like that's because Zetterberg was Swedish too. It's like insane.
Yeah, no, I know. Like at that time, we had scouts like, ooh, they would go far. They would go deep. Now the NHL, I mean, if you're anywhere in the world, they'll find you. If you're good, they'll find you. But they might pass up on you too because I think Lane Hudson, Seattle passed up on him four or five times. We have to check that, but 4 or 5 times on Lane Hudson, rookie of the year, right? And he still came in the second round. And if you have to redraft today, obviously he's the first overall. So
Let's move to Montreal now because you finished your career in Montreal. We won't talk about those 4 years. They're stricken from the record, but not that they were bad, but you didn't win any Stanley Cups.
No.
So we're going to blow past that because now the Montreal Canadiens, like they're Stanley Cup bound after what they did last year, lost in the conference finals to the eventual Stanley Cup winners in Carolina, an exciting route there, beat Tampa Bay, beat Buffalo. As a Montreal insider, you're everywhere, you know, you're Mr. Montreal. How excited are you, A, just for the run they made last year, but B, for the future? It's insane.
Oh, it's awesome. And you know, you talk about, you know, Ken Hughes and the signings, like signing all these guys under 10 mil. And then you got all the other guys making 18 now and 17. Like it's going to be great for many, many years. I mean, the window's open for a good 5 or 6 years for the Canadians because their core is signed long-term, and they're only going to get better. I mean, they're all young. They're all very young, a couple years in type of thing. And there's still a few players like a Hage and a Zorowski that are supposed to be unbelievable talent coming in to help. But for the time being now, and now you have that number one goaltending in Dobesh. You have a really good, solid backup and Fowler that's supposed to be, you know, the future also. So it just, I mean, everything is clicking for the Montreal Canadiens. And I mean, we had some tough years, but that new plan, they came in and they're able to sign. And now it's like, it's been a quiet offseason because I think, you know, all the other teams are like, I don't want to trade with Montreal. Like, I think they have everybody's number type of thing, even on trade. So it's just like, and they're not willing to depart with all their good stuff. They're keeping the plan. Just keep going for the future type of thing. But I mean, a Suzuki older, a Caulfield older, and, you know, Lane Hudson's a year older. I think it was tough to see him lose the way they did against Carolina. But then after Carolina wins. And it's just the way Carolina won, too. Like, it's, I mean, they shackled everybody. Just they did. Because we were trying to cover, like, you know, they're playing in Carolina's hands type of thing, but they didn't have any answers to Carolina's way. And we all thought Vegas would, you know, bump them around and they did in the first few games. But after that, you know, they took over. So they're very resilient the way Carolina won. But to go back to Montreal, I think the future is awesome. And it's exciting. It's exciting hockey. I mean, to see Lane Hudson, Demidov, the way they, I just saw him, like I'm doing a few things there. We have a 3-on-3 league that that we host with our podcast. And it's just like, I mean, to see those guys 3-on-3, it's crazy. Oh, Demidov, the hands on him. It's sick. It's sick the way he's just that good. So a year older, and these guys want to be there too, John. Like they all want to be part of the solution to win for the Montreal Canadiens. And to have played for them, it's still the best place to win in the NHL. Yeah. That's my thought. And it's a tough place to lose, tough market, but it's a great, great place to win. And now, you know, like the fans are behind them and everybody, and everything is exciting. So I think, you know, a few years down the road, yeah, I think they can really compete. You know, those playoffs were crazy because they're game sevens that it could have went either way. I mean, do you think they really had a business winning against Tampa Bay with only 9 shots?
Right,
and actually,
yeah,
one of them from behind the net. So on a ricochet. But sometimes, it, you know, like I said earlier in the podcast, I mean, you need a bounce. And we had a bounce. Every team that wins the Stanley Cup has a special moment throughout, like their backs are against the wall type of thing. And you need to bear down and you get a bounce to go your way.
And then Dobish played lights out. The one thing that I wanted to ask, because I think, you know, the issue in Detroit right now is Larkin was critical of Eisner and not maybe going out and getting that Quinn Hughes, going out and taking that next step and trying to improve his team at the deadline or in the offseason. Montreal did nothing this offseason. They got $10 million in cap space. They had that incredible run. Do the young guys, I know they don't need anything, but it does give them a boost to say, okay, hey, like we're a Stanley Cup contender. We're not just a feel-good story, but they didn't do anything. Like they literally just re-signed a couple guys, obviously the Demidov thing. They bring back Kirby Dach. Does that play into it at all mentally with the guys in Montreal?
I think it's no secret that they're always trying to improve the team. And sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, you need two to tango to make a good deal. And like I said earlier, I think the teams are a bit wary. Like, ooh, what are you, am I going to get paid?
Do you think
here
they tried to grab guys? Like, think they made offers to people?
Well, remember just before at the deadline, they had, I think it was Matthew Nyes was supposed to be.
Yeah, the Nyes.
Right? So that was supposed to be at the deadline before the playoffs. So they were making moves. And I guess the deal was a deal, but the deadline type of thing. So that's where I'm not sure about the issue there. But obviously the deal didn't go through. So they tried to revisit it. And obviously now with the new staff in Toronto, we're not going to do that. We're going to reevaluate. But they're always trying to improve the team. And if they feel like there's something there, they'll do it. And I think as a player, I think it's very motivating. And I've been at the other side of the token where you're just, I remember in 2005, I think it was, we're sitting there and we have the fifth choice overall. And who do they pick? Carey Price. I'm like, we had Jose Theodore that just won the fucking, you know, the MVP.
Yeah.
Why, as a player, like I get you get the best talent available. But as a player, you're like, we want to win now. Like my career is now. Why pick another goalie when we already have a standout goalie? That was my issue. And Kopitar was still available at the time where we needed a tall, big centerman. Like pick him instead. But I mean, I played with Carey and he was awesome and he had a great career, obviously a Hall of Fame career. But it's just as a player, when you're in there, like you want to get stuff done right away. So I can understand on Larkin's part where you're going into a deadline and the worst words you can hear from a GM is like, I like our team as it is. I've heard that one before. And that sucks. It's just like, I could get a deal done, but I'm not going to tell anybody. So it's just, I like the team as it is. No, we don't. You always want to boost.
Well, I don't actually.
maybe for the ice time type of it. But I remember in 99, I went down for a nap and I think it was Mike Canubo who played for Detroit. I think he was in Boston or New York. He calls me and he goes, you guys are going to win the cup. What do you mean? You traded for 4 guys. So in 99, we're trying to go for a three-peat. We got Ulf Samuelsson, Bill Ranford, Wendell Clark, and Chris Chelios at the trade deadline. Like, that's what you want from it. Yeah, that's what you want from management, right? And to win. So it was a feel-good story, but we didn't win that year. Ozzie got a bad knee or something. Something happened. But anyways, it's just as a player, you know, like you want that reinforcement, and Larkin didn't get it, and he was there, and he's a hometown boy too, right? Like he's from Michigan,
Oh,
so
yeah.
it's just like it gets hard. He's the captain, and so he probably stays there year round. I know the feeling of being in Montreal year round, and you're the one that answers all the questions. All the golf tournaments, all the events is like, hey, what happened? What are you guys going to do? Type of thing. As from your teammates, you know, April comes and then they're flying off and they're only coming back in September. So I can understand Larkin a bit, like that pressure, just I need more help. I need more help type of thing. But at the same time, you can't just sacrifice for no reason. If it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. But you know, there's a lot of smart people in Detroit, so I'm not gonna knock them, but I think a change is needed, obviously, because it hasn't worked in the 9 years that 10 years
Yeah.
now that they haven't made the playoffs.
So back to Montreal. I'm going to play devil's advocate because I love Montreal. I think their future's bright. Okay, this season, just say they're stagnant. They decent regular season team. They lose in the first or second round. Then it happens again. How long is Marty St. Louis' runway? How long is Kent Hughes' runway? And at what point do you talk about? And this is a lot of what ifs, but they're very similar to, you know, like the Buffalo Sabres of 5 years ago, the Ottawa Senators of 5 years ago, the Red Wings of 5 years ago, where you have all this promise, all this young talent, all this great salary situation, all these draft picks and prospects that are just sitting in the minors or in juniors still. And then it doesn't really go anywhere. Like Ottawa's, I think, plateaued. I don't think they're getting any better than what they are right now. And Buffalo, great story. We'll see where that goes. How long is this runway? Like, do we just let this go carte blanche because of this one good season?
Well, I tell you what, the thing about Marty St. Louis is that all the young talent under him have improved every year. And that's why you have to look. Like, we had Dom Ducharme, which I like as a coach. He's now assistant coach in Vegas, but like Caulfield couldn't score under him. Marty St. Louis comes in and then he scores lights out, right? He scored 50, so 51. And I think you have like Demidov that came in, had a great year. Hudson, a great follow-up season from his rookie campaign. So Suzuki over 100 points. Like all these guys are improving. It's when you see those guys like stagnant, like you mentioned, if those guys underperform, that's when they'll probably turn to Marty St. Louis. But that's like, I mean, it's a short leash in Montreal for sure because we analyze everything. And I mean, there's so many talk shows and radio and TV shows because that's the thing. That's the one thing about the Montreal market. What's the biggest difference is that from Detroit, I mean, there's football, there's baseball, there's basketball, there's hockey, there's college. So there's journalists everywhere. In Montreal, this is it. I mean,
Well, let
there's
me ask
the.
you that. Are you guys critical of this team? Like, what, or is there any guys who are untouchable that you just kind of hands off? Because I know in Toronto, they wouldn't say anything about Austin Matthews for years. Just they didn't want to ruffle his feathers. You know, they don't want to
I
upset the players.
think Hudson is untouchable. Demidov is untouchable. I think who's touchable is Caulfield. I think he could be available because his playoffs were so-so type of thing. Like he didn't have a good playoff. He scored a few goals, but they weren't like the big goals
They
like
weren't
he
big
had.
goals, yeah.
Right. Like he scored a lot of goals, like either game-tying goals or overtime goals during the regular season. But you know, during the playoff, it wasn't the same. And I think Suzuki's there to stay. He's been a great leader. He's an Yzerman type of guy, like quiet, but just through leadership on the ice. And so I think those are the guys that I don't see moving. Anybody else is fair game if they can improve. Like we have the room, and now you're gonna call me crazy, but we have the room, we have the assets for everything for a McDavid type of trade. We do have
I
it.
believe it.
Yeah. So, you know, they'll want, we have pick any of the goalies you want. Like Edmonton needs a goalie. Pick any of them. They need, you know, some defensemen. Go ahead. Anybody from, but Hudson, that's fine. And there's some good, you know, Dobson's been, he's been, had a good year. Matheson's been good, but Gouley is, you know, a future captain somewhat. He's making big change, but he's playing on the third pair. So I think there's a lot of assets in Montreal's arsenal to really see throughout the regular season. and then they're going to make that jump to get that second line centerman, or even in McDavid's case, a super all-star. So I think there's a lot of leeway because all those guys are so young and they're so proud mm-hmm. that they'll keep improving. And they made a few changes. Obviously, Gallagher's gone. Like, that was a big salary. Like, I know they have to retain a few of it, but 6.5 for a guy, you know, that's in and out of the lineup, and he's done great things for the Canadians over the year. But now it's like, okay, it's time for the young guys to really step up. So they're making, right now, they're making all the right moves. That's how I see it. And the conference finals, it wasn't in the books. It was like, you know, maybe win that first round. That was it this year. So we were blessed to have like some crazy game sevens, comebacks, or whatever it was. And it looks good on paper, but at the same time, I don't think they're ready for the cup yet. But they're only a few years away because that core keeps getting older and better and more experience.
It's crazy looking at the salary cap situation. You have 10. There's about 15 coming off the books next year. And all your big guys are locked up. So if Hughes plays this right, like you're like you said, like you have a big runway. And you, like, I never even thought of McDavid.
We think that'd be pretty all cool. The time.
Is he number one? Is there anybody else that you would like? What, Austin Matthews? Or obviously you talk about everybody, but Montreal's a tough market to come to.
It is a tough market, but at the same time, when like it used to be tough to draw anybody, come to Montreal. Well, who am I gonna play with? Well, right now it's like you look at that power play, like, I'm in. Hudson and Suzuki, Caulfield and all the Demidov. I mean, everybody wants to come in. And what Montreal is missing is basically a second-line center. And Newhook's played well. I mean, he's played well. He had some great playoffs, great playoff goals. But in order for the Canadiens to be a really good contender, you want a Newhook on the third line. So we're missing that center. And it's kind of weird that Hage decided to stay, I mean, to stay in college for an extra year because everybody says – he came in for the rookie camp again this year, and it's like all the guys that I talked to said he's the only NHL ready guy. Like you could tell he's NHL ready, but he's going back to college, right? One more year. But
Who is this guy? I don't know this guy.
Michael Hage. He was like the top Team Canada, junior Team Canada goal scorer or points. Yeah. He's a first rounder that they had a few years ago, and supposedly he's the real deal. So it's just like, and he's. He's mixing well, being a young guy, to just kind of come in and play with like a Demidov and stuff. But he decided to play an extra year. I think his brother is going to Michigan too or something. So, but I think everybody was kind of looking forward. Well, if we can't trade, we have one from within that's supposed to be the real deal from what I hear. But like I mentioned earlier, I mean, Montreal, they do have the asset and they'll, you know, at the right time, they'll make the right move. Obviously, you know, the earlier the better, but if the team is on the right track, come to the trade deadline, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they're not going to give up the bank unless it's like a McDavid type of thing, but you know, I might be just blowing smoke, but they have the assets to do it. Yeah. But Detroit, I mean, if Detroit loses Larkin and they can't replace him with number one center or anything close, then what's the point, right?
But that doesn't make sense for Detroit to try to get a number one center in return because they're not, even with a number one center, they're not doing anything, right?
Well, it's tough to say because last year they were number one in the Atlantic.
You lose Larkin, you gain a number one, you still have a huge chasm at center. True. There's nobody there.
True. So, but I mean, Montreal doesn't have a second line center either. I mean, we had Jake Evans playing on the second line. Yeah. And Jake, I like Jake Evans. And Jake Evans is a solid number three or number four, but I think he could play a good number three. He's a good shutdown guy. He gets a lot of chances. He doesn't have that finish that we want, but still. But they had him on the second line. They had, you know, Newhook, Evans, Demidov. So they're still missing that number two, and they still made a pretty good run. But, you know, because Suzuki's just, he's all world, right? He's awesome.
Mathieu, I've been saying it for years. You win Stanley Cups down the middle. And that's what teams look for. Like Minnesota has no second line center. Look at Carolina. They had Aho, Stankoven, Staal, Jankowski. Yeah. Like they were loaded down the middle. It was tough to compete with that team. But I don't want to take any more of your time, my friend. I got to do this all night. Oh, but I know you got to go fix your barn. I know you got to go get ready for the season. You got to go get ready.
We had a couple of pickleball shape nights. Yeah, pickleball. Huge on pickleball. You got all these kids and everything, but eventually you guys can have your own tournament. But we're like 12 or 16 guys every week playing pickleball, man. I can actually play 50 and over now. I turned 50.
You know Cody Hodson owns a pickleball team?
Is that right?
I don't know. Yeah, like one of the professional ones. I'm surprised you don't.
I know that Zetterberg, he has Z Smash in Detroit, but those are padel. The one with the glass wall. I don't know if you've seen those. It's like a tennis mix type of thing, very European. And those Europeans, they don't play pickleball. No, we play padel. But anyways, no, it's huge and it's forever. And it's a camaraderie. I'll say it in French. And just to be around the guys, that's what you miss, right? You don't miss the game. You miss the dressing room. You miss the team.
You do. And that's why I like hanging out with you at the Montreal Canadiens alumni. Because you said, we've had a couple good nights where we've hung out and had some pops. It's a lot of fun.
Yes,
we should do it again. You got to get them to invite me back.
Oh, for sure. Like I'll hook you up for sure. Yeah, you got that one game. It was a hell of a game.
Give me the one game.
Yes, you're in.
Pay me the $300 Canadian, and I'm there anywhere in the country. You know it.
$300, fine. I'll take it out of my pocket. Yeah,
that's a lot. I know. I'm expensive.
Always been a cheap date. That's awesome.
That's right, baby. All right, Matthew, thanks for coming on, my friend. I appreciate it. All the best this season. We'll be in touch. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Oh,
cheers.
You'll be coming on my podcast now. You'll be coming. Yeah, Hockey with an Accent. You'll be coming in.
I can do my best accent. All right, Matthew.
All right.
Cheers. Good. Have a good one, my friend.
Take care, man. See you.